Welcome to the Grin Gets Real podcast, a show for marketers by marketers to talk shop and share insights on the ever-changing landscape of the digital world. My name is Katya, and I am your host on this exciting journey as we talk to our experts who join us. My guest today is Kaya Yuryev, a journalist from The Information. She joined The Information in April 2021 to launch the Creator Economy newsletter and write features about the fast-growing sector. She started her journalism career writing breaking news at The Street and has covered technology and social media platforms at CNN. So put your AirPods in, turn up the volume, and get ready for my guest today, Kaya Yuryev, as we talk influencer rates, NFTs, and the recession in the creator economy. Kaya, welcome to the Grin Gets Real podcast. I am really excited to have you on. I am a subscriber to your newsletter, so you keep me up to date on all things creator economy. So now you're on here and you can share your wealth of knowledge with our listeners as well.
Thank you, Katya. I appreciate you having me on.
So if you could start by sharing a little bit just kind of about your background and your expertise, just to lay the groundwork for our conversation today.
Yeah, sure. So I've been a business reporter for about 7 years. I started writing about stocks, actually, of all things. And then I moved to CNN, to the business unit, in 2017 to cover tech. So I covered big tech, I covered startups, I covered everything you can imagine. And then I narrowed my beat more to social media platforms and kind of focusing on the bigger technology companies. And then as part of that writing, I wrote a lot about creators and burnout and different types of social media influencers, and kind of started getting more interested in that space before joining The Information, where I'm at now. And I write a newsletter about the creator economy.
And that comes out 4 times a week, right?
It's Monday through Thursday.
Yeah, which really just fascinates me because there is so much changing in the space to begin with. So the fact that you've got like your finger on the pulse of it, it was tough to narrow it down. We did narrow it down because we definitely want to start talking about just kind of, I'm curious about NFTs and payments and, you know, influencer rates and all of that good stuff. But I always also really like to start off with the basics. And I want to make sure that we're talking about the same thing when we're using the terms that we are going to be talking about. So when we talk about creator economy, how do you define that? Who are the players in that space for you?
Yeah, it's a good question. I kind of look at it super simply as it's a new economic, relatively new economic model or system where people with an online following can build an audience, and typically they're making money from those fans. There's a lot of players involved. I think people kind of think of like the creators and the brands and that's it. But, you know, obviously the creators, but also the ecosystem they've built around themselves, video editors, business managers, assistants, photographers, and kind of all those roles in between that support behind the scenes. Then, of course, there's the platforms, the TikToks, the YouTubes, the Instagrams of the world, Pinterest and LinkedIn are getting involved now more with creators. And that's really where creators are building their audience, distributing their work. And then kind of on a similar vein, there's a ton of startups now that are focused on creators, especially over the past 2 years. And there's so many subsectors of that, but mostly it's tools and services for creators. So that could be financial tools, like credit cards for creators or ways to track their earnings. Then there's companies like Patreon for membership services. There's Substack for newsletters. And tons of other ways to kind of make money, online course providers. You know, we could spend a whole hour just talking about kind of all the startups involved. And then the last two kind of categories are obviously the brands and then investors who are backing companies that are providing tools. And in some cases, investors are actually investing directly in creators as if they were startups. So that's kind of how I look at the broad landscape.
I love it. Investing in people for sure. Creators is obviously, obvious because I'm with Grin. It is definitely a passion for me. And like when we're talking about brands, what value would you say creators bring to a brand?
Yeah. I mean, I think creators have super engaged audiences and we've gotten really sub-niche. I think especially with the rise of TikTok and because there's so many creators now, people have found this narrow lane for themselves. So I've interviewed creators who have entire Instagram accounts just on cheese boards and building like amazing cheese boards. And that's like their niche. Or, you know, I spoke with a woman who reviews family-friendly cars and talks about things like the cup holders and if your car seat can fit in it and stuff that families want to know that you might not get from a normal car dealership when you're buying a car. So I think advertisers often want to reach a really specific audience. So, you know, whether it's 18 to 34 year old women interested in beauty or people interested in cooking, they can find a creator that has that audience that's super engaged and trusts the recommendations. So, and I think like it comes off more trustworthy than a typical ad. Although of course we've all seen the stale, you know, SponCon on Instagram. That's like, okay, clearly you do not use this product, but I think have gotten savvier at partnering with brands and having a long-term relationship with them where they're more of an ambassador. And, you know, Dunkin' Donuts, for example, did a partnership with Charli D'Amelio and made a drink, you know, named after her that she actually drinks, and her followers know that she drinks Dunkin'. So I think the partnerships have gotten savvier in the past. Yeah. I think the big value is just reaching those audiences that creators have built that are often very specific.
With the creators that you have just kind of interviewed and been in touch with, what's the spectrum of creator? Because you just named some big heavy hitters, some big names, but it's always like my school of thought is that anybody that has a community that they have an influence over can potentially be a creator as well too. Now, some of them are obviously a lot more polished and have a lot more support around them, but have you interviewed creators along the entire spectrum from like starting off to like, you know, the big names?
Yeah, definitely. And I think too, the definition of creator has broadened. Like a few years ago, we would have said like, oh, a YouTuber or like an Instagram influencer. Now we really think of like independent musicians as creators. We think of podcasters. We think of newsletter writers, independent journalists who are going off on their own and writing a newsletter or giving people updates on Instagram. So I think there's a lot. I take a pretty broad definition of it. It's anyone that's really building, like you said, a community online and putting out content consistently on the internet. But yeah, I've talked to people across the spectrum. I mean, there's lots of people too that aren't making money yet, right? Like there's a lot of meme accounts, for example, like are still kind of just doing this for fun, or maybe it's just started as a passion project and they have a full-time job and they're trying to figure out kind of where to go. And then there's plenty of other people who have quit their jobs and done this full-time.
Yeah, to me, that is fascinating, being able to quit your daytime to create a new version of like your daytime job and what that looks like. And it's not that it's easier. I think that, you know, creators sometimes just get a bad rap. It takes a lot to put something together. I mean, when I even look at it from like the podcast standpoint, right? Like to produce one podcast, if anybody knew, right? Like behind the scenes, all of the things that have to happen in order to get one piece of content out on a regular basis. And I imagine you also feel that same way with a consistent newsletter that you're pushing out four times a week, right?
Yeah. And obviously I do have a team that helps me, right?
Like of course. And as do I, but I think that's what you're talking about when you mentioned the creator economy, right? It's not just the creator. There is an entire support system behind that. And like, you know, the level of creation, I guess. I'm going to end up using this word so much. But that level of creation really determines how many people you have on your team in order to like get it to, or in order to execute.
Yeah. But even for a lot of creators, they're still a one-person show. I mean, for a lot of people, doing this by themselves, which is crazy.
It is. I think it's absolutely insane. In the kind of conversations that you've had, is there a consistent like sentiment from a creator standpoint about like brands that reach out to them? And like, what's the creator sentiment behind everything?
I think the biggest thing is just if a brand can give them creative control, because I think a lot of creators get spooked or are annoyed when brands are like, okay, we want to work with you and we need this by next Tuesday and this is the script and this is what we want. And I think a lot of creators want brands to just trust them. Like, I know how to speak to my audience. I know what's going to resonate. I was just actually on a VidCon panel and we were talking about like red flags and brand sponsorship deals and managers. And this topic came up a lot where, you know, you want to make sure in the contract that like they've talked about revisions and like what they expect. And like you've had all that conversation so that a creator then isn't reshooting a brand campaign five times, right? And wasting time for that. So I think there's a lot of considerations, but I think the biggest thing I hear is just that the brand really trusts you to integrate them into the content and not exert too much control over like the messaging of it.
I think that's a great idea. And it's definitely something that we ourselves really harp on as well too. That's how you get like that authentic content, because you want a creator to genuinely know and love your brands. I mean, maybe they don't have to be in love, but they have to have a very strong like for it, right? Like I'm going to authentically talk about something that I am passionate about very naturally, right? And as long as you give me the bullet points, I can articulate out to my audience what it is that I like and appreciate about that. I think that from the brand side, you know, you're talking about what you consistently hear, or you mentioned what you consistently hear on like the creative freedom. On the brand side, there is the rate fluctuation, right? Like, have you seen the prices? The influencer rates, is there some sort of inflation that comes with it? But I like, what kind of trends are you seeing in regards to payments, and has it really fluctuated that's question one. Do you see it? Is that like a true statement? There is a fluctuation in regards to like the influencer rates between like, you know, what happened 2 years ago to now?
I think this whole industry is so opaque, and especially for creators that are just starting out, a lot of times like a creator doesn't know how much to charge. So they are probably undervaluing themselves. And that's probably why you see so much variation. I think the biggest thing is that managers can really help because they're managing multiple clients. So they have a view into rates and can kind of help negotiate and say, okay, I worked with X brand for this client and you have a similar following and engagement level. So you can actually ask for $3,000 more or whatever it is. What's been interesting is kind of seeing some of the startups that have popped up to help with this, because you don't have a manager or you're just starting out, it can be really hard to know what to charge for. And it also depends so much on what the deal is. Are you doing 5 Instagram stories and a TikTok and a post? Like that charge, that's more than just doing one thing, right? Or how long is the exclusivity window for? Can you not post about other brands in the space for a certain amount of time? Or, you know, are they licensing your content? There's so many things that go into the price. But it's been interesting to see some of these services come up that are acting kind of like a glass door for creators. So Clara, which was founded by a former TikTok employee, and FYPM, which is short for F You Pay Me, which is by a creator. And they're providing kind of reviews and people can share some of the rates so you can get a better sense. But I think generally it's very opaque. And that's something that it has been hard for creators to know what their value is, what their worth is. And two, it depends just on so many factors and kind of what is involved with the brand sponsorship itself.
Do you see a lot of creators acting as a business for themselves as a creator? So for example, as a business, you know, I would put together just my metrics, my KPIs, like what it is that I'm bringing to the table by hiring me as like a service provider, for example, right? Like this is what I can do for you. This is our proven success. So I guess that's what I'm thinking through. Do you see that there are creators shifting to making it a business and acting like a business versus, you know, I'll post for you, but you need to give me $500 a post or $2,000 a post or $10,000 a post, right? Without having a lot to back it up.
So it's interesting. It really depends on the creator. I think a lot of creators get into this because they're really passionate about something or they have a skill and they're true creative. So sometimes that transition of, wait, I'm actually an entrepreneur and I'm building a business and I have to run this accordingly, can, for some people, that's really easy. And for some people, it's hard. And that's why a lot of people hire managers to kind of deal with those negotiations and help them run the business side so they can focus on being kind of the talent and the creative side. But like we said, you know, there are tons of creators that are doing this just all on their own, which is but yeah, I mean, they have to kind of figure it out. I mean, they are a small business in and of itself, and they are brands. You know, they have a personal brand, so they have to act accordingly.
Would you say, or do you think that because there are I don't know if there are more creators or more people are identifying themselves as creators. And to your point, you know, that's, you know, there's a play for the managers representing like multiple creators. Would you see an influx in talent managers, you know, creator management, talent managers because of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think there definitely are more creators. I mean, TikTok has been a huge driver of that just because it's made it so much more accessible. I think if you wanted to get started on YouTube or Instagram, it's really hard. I mean, now they have short form video and that's helping with discovery. But if you're trying to just build up a traditional YouTube channel, that's much harder now just because there's so many more creators. There's so many more users and attention and competition. And TikTok has really ushered in this completely new generation of creators who have been able to build up a following really quickly. Whereas on YouTube, it might have taken someone 10 years to get to the same level of following that someone, you know, got in a very short amount of time on TikTok. So I think there definitely are more creators, and with that, the economy around it grows. So there's good stats on this, but I wouldn't be surprised if there are more talent agents or if talent agents are taking on more clients now too.
So I read an article that described just kind of that disparity of influencer payments between, well, we're always talking about the gender gap in payments, right? There's a lot of gap. There's a lot of disparity when it comes to it. What do you think about the brands or businesses in the creator economy? What can they do to just kind of combat like that disparity between payments?
Yeah, I mean, I think I was on a separate panel on South by Southwest, and we were discussing this topic about like how a lot of times you see these big pushes with diverse creators around certain times of the year. So like Pride Month, suddenly, you know, LGBTQ creators are getting this influx of interest, or during Black History Month. And, you know, while that's positive and you want that representation, creators have said, like, we want to be represented all year round. We don't want it to just be kind of in one month. We've seen also platforms set up diverse creator funds. So Snapchat most recently announced a $3 million year-long fund where chosen creators will receive $10,000 a month and mentorship opportunities and educational sessions. YouTube and Facebook have both had similar programs for, I think, since 2020. So those are all kind of positive steps forward. One thing that I heard from Storyblocks, which is a provider of stock footage and other kind of images for creators, is that they'll sometimes counter a creator with a higher offer, which I think is really interesting. And you don't hear that a lot, where if a creator is underselling themselves, they'll say, no, actually, this is our rate. And they found that over the long term, that's actually a better relationship for everyone. So that would be really interesting if, especially for underrepresented groups, if brands just took that initiative and said, no, you know what? And looked at their own books and said, oh, wow, we have this disparity here. These are the steps forward. Maybe we have kind of a set rate based on engagement that will pay everyone. Because I think a lot of times it just comes down to the negotiation. Maybe they have a super, you know, shark as a manager who's negotiating better them, but it is, like I said, super opaque. But I think there's a lot of things brands and platforms can both do to improve it.
Yeah, I think I was actually reading it in one of your newsletters, what the platforms are doing, to just kind of balance that out. I think you mentioned Snapchat, but I think I believe that Meta does something as well too, and Instagram.
Yeah, YouTube and TikTok as well has a Black creator fund. They have a Latino-focused fund as well.
And I am assuming that those are all being well received and talked about. Or maybe I just wonder, like, I know it because I read it on your newsletter, right? I'm like, wow, I don't know that this is part of the conversation. So, you know, my thought is, especially when you have just kind of these gaps, right? That it's not a one-time conversation. It's not one article. It's the continued conversation. Do you think that this is a continued conversation within the creator economy to just maybe narrow the gap?
Yeah, I mean, I think we definitely should talk about it more. I think all these funds and programs are all positive steps. But I think you can't just do one program and be like, okay, great, I solved it, right? Like,
there's a lot. Exactly. Done. Check.
There's a lot more work to be done. I think also, besides funds like this, TikTok has been working on ways to credit creators who have originated things, because that's an issue that where a lot of Black creators are trendsetters. They're the ones creating these viral TikTok dances and they don't always get credit for it. So I think TikTok starting to take some steps to, you know, you can see where the original sound came from, and they're taking some steps to credit better. And Instagram has done that too with some tagging. So I think it's really a holistic approach. Like, yes, the funds and the mentorship are one aspect of it, but things like crediting are also a great way to kind of to rise up underrepresented voices and people who are driving trends.
I love that because you're right. It is, you know, well, money talks, and I think everybody always feels that, but I can appreciate your view on, like, holistically, what can we do? The continued conversation, right? The crediting, as well as, like, the pay gap too. Okay, let's talk NFTs, because I went down this rabbit hole, and I told you beforehand, I'm not an NFT expert, but I do think that there is room, just kind of, especially in the creator economy, for this to really blow up and to kind of show just the value of a creator, right? Mm-hmm. I think that a lot of times as a marketer, it's really hard to attribute to the value of a creator unless you have a one-to-one sale, right? Like, I've made revenue, there is value in this, but there is value in the creation of content, and in whatever format that looks like, from an influencer post to a podcast to, you know, a newsletter. So what effect would you say NFTs have within the creator economy?
It's still really early days. Last year, there was a lot of FOMO element of every day. It was practically a headline of, you know, Jack Dorsey's tweet sells as an NFT for a huge amount of money. There was no shortage of that. So it was seen a bit as a little bit of a land grab, money grab. And I think a lot of creators wanted to sit that out because they don't want to look like they're doing some get rich quick scheme to their followers. So I think some creators were a little spooked by it. It's complicated. Crypto is a totally different language. It's a new technology. It's super early days. People have described buying NFTs to me, and it's super complicated to figure out how to buy one. So this really isn't consumer ready yet. A lot of investments going into the space. Obviously, we've seen crypto prices nosedive. Yeah. With NFT prices this year. So that's cooled, I think, some of the excitement around it, at least from the side. But I think the ethos of Web3 and NFT and having more ownership and a new monetization stream, there are parallels between the creator economy. What we haven't seen is this killer use case. I'm more interested in how creators could use NFTs and pair them with some sort of real world experiences. We've seen that start to happen where, you know, maybe you're an NFT holder and then that gives you a discount on merchandise, or it gives you a meet and greet ticket to their next concert or their next event that they're going to. So I think if they can pair things and give people real world value, that might land better with their audience. Yeah. But I think especially now in the environment we're in, I'm not seeing a ton of creators start new NFT projects, but there was that FOMO element last year of, oh, I don't totally understand this technology, or I'm thinking about it, but I'm trying to be thoughtful about it. And then there's just so many NFT projects and so much going on that it can also feel kind of hard to stand out at the same time.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, and you're right, it has definitely gone down, which brings me to my next question. What kind of effect do you think the talks of recession is having or can have within the creator economy?
The big topic of discussion is definitely around brand sponsorships. Oftentimes during downturns and recessions, ad budgets are the first thing that gets scaled back and cut. We saw this a little bit during COVID, at the height of COVID, where a lot of travel influencers were freaking out because they're like, my whole business is traveling. That's impossible right now. We saw a knee-jerk reaction from brands pulling back spending, canceling brand sponsorships. We haven't seen that to quite the same extent now. But it's an open question of how brands are going to allocate budget. And it's very possible that they might shift to doing more influencer marketing because it's less expensive than doing a TV campaign or a subway takeover or a billboard or something like that. So we might see that shift in favor of creators. It's really early to tell now. My big question too is on disposable income and direct fan monetization. If people are, you know, scaling back their spending and maybe canceling subscriptions to Netflix or other streaming services or stuff that they feel they don't need, is that going to affect Patreon, you know, memberships for creators, or Instagram is testing subscriptions you know, Twitch and YouTube all have these features. Are fans going to feel like they have less disposable income to support some of those endeavors or pay for creators' merch? Or that's a question too. you know, maybe some of the top fans will still be supportive, but that's a big question of, as we've expanded all these ways for creators to make money, which pockets of that are going to be impacted the most? It's still early. There has been some reporting and some agencies that have said that they've seen, you know, brands take longer to sign campaigns or ask more questions, or they're thinking through their plans more, but we haven't seen this giant across the board pullback yet.
Yeah, I can really appreciate what you're talking about in regards to just kind of disposable income. There's a part of me that, and I'm really interested in hearing your thoughts on this, but there's a part of me that's thinking, with brands just kind of pulling back or asking more questions, it's like they're not doubling down on like, okay, I need this influencer to perhaps get me like that sale. But I almost think there should be, from a brand's perspective at least, how can I leverage the audience of this creator that I'm working with, right? So maybe they do, you know, if consumers in general don't have as much disposable income, and I had originally had this objective of, okay, they're going to be my revenue drivers, maybe I can leverage this relationship with this creator that I have to help build out a community, so that when there is that disposable income, you've built out more of a community. There's more brand equity. There's more brand loyalty, because you kind of have been there through it all as a brand. But I'm curious to hear if, I don't know, do you think that's BS? It's okay if you do. But like,
what do you mean? That, like, a brand and a creator doing a Discord server together? Like, what are you?
I mean, I think it's more of like, it's depending on creators, less for the sale and more for the brand equity building that you want to.
I think we've seen that with longer term partnerships. That's been a trend that I've noticed of, you know, a creator has flown Delta for a long time naturally and always posts about it. And then they get that partnership, and oftentimes fans are excited for them because they're like, oh, I know that you actually fly Delta. Oh, I know you always use group sunscreen or whatever it is. So, and I think putting in the brand consistently through the content, even if you're not trying to sell a direct product at that moment, just reminding audiences of that, like, that as a trend of, and it's a positive for creators because they almost have a salary where they're like, okay, I know I'm doing this longer term partnership, 12 months or 8 months or whatever it is, and I know I'm getting X amount and I can sprinkle this in. So it can be a win-win. I think it doesn't always work, and you probably want a mix of short-term and long-term partnerships
for sure.
But those kind of brand ambassadorships, I mean, I see this with Rent the Runway a lot, where creators are posting in their Rent the Runway outfit, and they have a code and it's there, and they're showing throughout the year, oh, look at all these outfits that I, you know, that I bought. So that's definitely a strategy. It doesn't always have to be about converting people that moment, that campaign. Sometimes the goal of the campaign is just general awareness or downloads of an app or whatever it is. So it depends too what the brand is trying to achieve in that moment.
No, I agree. Now, before we do get to just kind of the prediction question, I'm going to totally throw you completely off, because I want to know, just based on everything that you see on such a regular basis, when it comes to the creator economy, what is that thing that you're super passionate about? My team and I always talk about, like, choose your hills, choose your hill that you're going to die on, right? Or like that soapbox moment. Everybody has one or two that they feel strongly about. But I would think that since you're in this space all the time, like, oh, I'm so interested in learning what your hill is. Like, what are you so passionate about in this space?
I think for me, it's really talking more about burnout and addressing that in different ways. Because I think we talk so much about the exciting things of the creator economy and the potential of it, and we glamorize it often. And I think there's a really ugly reality to this industry. So I'm really interested in the ways that both platforms and startups and creators are helping themselves kind of go through that burnout. If you look at some of the really early YouTubers like Jenna Marbles, like, she's completely fallen off kind of the, you know, she's not posting anymore. We don't really know what's going on in her life. And we've seen that with a lot of creators where, so I think that's, burnout is the thing that I'm most interested in, and the different ways that people can alleviate that. Maybe that's a longer term brand sponsorship. Maybe that's subscriptions on Instagram. Instagram, you know, what are the solutions for that? Is there something platforms can do to alleviate that pressure to constantly be posting? So I think that's the thing that I always ask creators about, is their mental health and burnout and what they're doing to kind of alleviate some of that stuff.
That's a great conversation. I like that this is your hill as well, too, because, you know, I'll see it with creators that I follow, like on TikTok, because it's because the algorithm of the platforms, right? Like if you're leaving for a week, if you want to take a digital vacation, which is good for mental health, yeah. Right? I need to walk away. I can't see this. Like, you know, you are as a creator, and if it's your livelihood, you're penalized for that from an algorithm standpoint. Do you see platforms helping creators out with that?
So it's come up where YouTube has said, look, we've looked at our systems and we don't across the board, you know, penalize people who have taken a break. But then every creator is a little bit different, who said, you know, I took X amount of time off and then it took me a year to get back to the engagement. I mean, there's so yeah. many things factor into it, but it's positive that platforms are addressing it and looking at it internally. I think what's hard though is the incentives are not aligned, where these are all ad-driven models and they depend on content and in large part from creators. If you look at how TikTok is set up, everyone's on the For You page. No one's looking at the other tab. It used to be called Following. I think now it's called Friends, but you're really on your For You page. So if a creator is not making content consistently, it's almost like they don't exist on TikTok because people are mostly looking at the For You page. So I think it's a tough problem for platforms to tackle because they need creators to consistently create. I think maybe on Instagram, it might be a little bit easier to take a break. But at the same time, I don't know how then that factors into the algorithm and people seeing your content when you come back. So it's a little bit of a black box. But I think if platforms can really take a look and make sure that they're not punishing creators for taking a break, that's a positive.
I love it. All right, now it's prediction time. What changes do you see happening within the creator economy? Let's just take the first, like, over the next year.
Yeah. So two things. I think on the business side, I think we're going to see a ton of consolidation of startups. I mean, just in the LinkedIn bio space, there's more than 40 companies that offer a LinkedIn bio link. So it's a lot of companies across the board that are doing similar things. So I think we're going to, especially in the environment we're in, we're going to see more M&A. We're going to see, unfortunately, some companies shut down and run out of money, especially as venture capital money is a little bit more scarce compared to last year, where it was really boom times. So that's what I really expect. And I think, too, creators are really getting savvier about building their own mailing lists. It's been really interesting to see people revert back to like blogging and having a website again, because it used to be like, oh, that's irrelevant. Like my Instagram page is my website. And I think just over the years, we've seen platforms change their algorithms or make changes, or now Instagram's all about short form video. And if you're a photographer, what does that mean for you as someone on the platform? So we're really seeing creators mature and take that next step of trying to build either a brand or an offline business, or just have more control over their audience. Maybe it's just starting a newsletter for the purpose of trying to get mailing lists and being able to get a direct line to creators. So I think like the platform relevancy is not going to go away. It's still the best way to distribute your content. But we're going to see more of creators really taking a hard look of like, okay, how do I reach my audience? We saw Instagram have that huge outage last year. You know, what happens in those cases? Yeah. I think creators just becoming, taking themselves really seriously as businesses. And then on the business side of just startups, the startup landscape is going to change a lot.
Oh, this is juicy stuff as far as like prediction standpoint. I really appreciate you taking so much time with me just to dig into, and I know we just scratched the surface, honestly. I think that the creator economy is a podcast of its own. There probably is one out there. But thank you so much for, you know, sharing so much of your time and your knowledge with us today.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Now, I know that the topic of the creator economy is broad, and we really only scratched the surface, but I hope that these kind of just thought starters serve as little appetizers to keep the conversation going. Now, the topic of influencer payments is always top of mind for brands and creators alike, and knowing that there are tools out there to help us all really kind of speak that common language is really helpful. But what I think would be even more helpful is talking about it. For brands, it's understanding the value of a creator as a business. And as a creator, it's really understanding what you are and the fact that you're an entrepreneur. And each partnership is really a business negotiation. And for both, it's all about putting together something that is mutually beneficial. So you want to hear more? Be sure to subscribe to the Grid Gets Real podcast to get the latest episodes. Give us some stars. I wouldn't mind 5 of them. And leave me a review. Connect with me on social. You can find me on LinkedIn, Katya Allison. And if you're interested in learning more about Grin, visit our website at grin.co. Until next time, keep grinning.